So today we are observing Srila Prabhupada's arrival in America. So sometimes somebody asks, why? Why did Srila Prabhupada come on his ship? Why didn't he just get on an airplane, a jet, and fly to America? There was Air India jets. Air India. No, in 1964, I happened to come to India. Oh, good, this morning sun. I happened to come to India, as a tourist, and although I came by ship, I returned by airplane. Is it okay? Okay. Who? Yes, they can. Okay, can move it a little bit. Yeah, I flew from Bombay to New York via London. It took about 20 hours, no problem. Boeing 707. So that was 1964. So 1965, why Prabhupada didn't get on an airplane and go? Well, the fact is that that was way beyond what Prabhupada was accustomed to. A ticket would have cost a lakh of rupees. Prabhupada, since coming to Vrindavan, when he gave up everything, his business, and he had no money. There was no income. And he wouldn't go around asking people to give me a lakh of rupees so I can fly, get on an airplane, and have a comfortable... At most, Prabhupada was, whenever he would ask for donations, he would go to wealthy people. He would ask for donations for printing his books, the Bhagavatams. He went to Hitsaran Sharma in Delhi. He was a secretary for some very wealthy industrialist, forget the name. Then he went to Hanuman Prasad Padar in Gorakhpur, Gita Press. Then he went to Samarthi Maharaje in Bombay. And they would give him, to print a volume of Bhagavatam. It was, a few thousand rupees. Not a lakh of rupees. Actually, the system Prabhupada used in printing his books is that, as I mentioned before, he stayed at the Chippiwada Radha Krishna Temple in Delhi, which was located right where the printing industry was. all the printers and paper wallahs and binders and everything where they were located. So Prabhupada would take the manuscript of the Bhagavatam, let's say volume one, bring it to the printer. The printer would then have it typeset with metal type, metal letters. Then they would run a galley proof, long sheets of paper, and then Prabhupada would make the corrections, because they would make hundreds of mistakes when they would make the typeface, the type setting. And then Prabhupada would see that they made the corrections. You know, they would put maybe a letter backwards or upside down or the wrong letter and, you know, things like that. So then after the typesetting was done, then Prabhupada himself would go to a paper seller and buy the paper that was required. Then he would personally, he would take it on the rickshaw. He would do everything so that the least amount was had to be spent. So he did all the work himself. He would personally bring the paper to the printer. Then he would pay the printer a down payment. And the printer would then print all the papers. Then after printing, then the papers had to be brought to the binders. And they had to, usually they would print 4 pages, actually on both sides, so that would be 8 pages. On a sheet of paper. They call it, I think, a quattro. Then that had to be folded. Then after all the folding was done, then they had to collate, bring all the folded pieces together to make the book. Then they had to press the book and then trim it, cut it. Then they had to sew all the quattros together using a needle and thread. And then it was ready for the binding. And the binding was made with, you know, hard piece of cardboard and then cloth. And they would paste it. But Prabhupada wouldn't do that part. He didn't do the final binding. What he would do is then send all the folded, unbound books back to the printer, and the printer would stock all of those, because Prabhupada never had enough money to do the entire process. So it, and then if he did, then, you know, then he had to warehouse the books. That's another expense. So Prabhupada would leave the unbound books with the printer, and he would warehouse it. And then as Prabhupada got money, he would come to the printer, pay the final installment on, let's say, 50 books, And then the printer would send those unbound books to the binder, and he would put the binding on, and then Prabhupada would take those 50 copies and then distribute them. And then come back and maybe get another 50 copies like that. You have to do it. It was a one-man operation. Very simple. Of course, then he had to write the books. Not very easy. And Prabhupada was living in poverty. He couldn't even afford the bus sometimes, the bus ticket. He would walk in Delhi, long distances. When we came to Vrindavan, to Radha Damodar Temple, to Prabhupada's rooms, I personally saw Prabhupada kept accounts of his daily income and daily expenditure. And it was it wasn't even in rupees, it was paisa. Prabhupada would, 30 paisa for vegetables, 50 paisa for charcoal. Prabhupada wasn't cooking. He didn't even use kerosene. He used charcoal. And then everything was carefully noted. So Prabhupada was dealing in paisa and, rupee. He wasn't dealing in lakhs. So there was no question of buying an airplane ticket. And Prabhupada followed, as we mentioned last time, the Yukta Vairagya. Whatever is available, you use that in Krishna's service. So Prabhupada was very intimate with Sumati Maharaja. She had a big shipping line, the Scindia shipping lines. They had about 100 ships. Very big operation. She was a very powerful woman, and to manage all those, ships, she got in World War II. In the 1940s, America built many of these freighter ships to carry war supplies to England. They built thousands of them. And they were very small and light, and they weren't designed to be long-lasting. They called them victory ships. So at the end of the war, they had all these ships. They had no use for it. So they would sell it at a very cheap price. So that's what Sumati Maharaja did. She bought all these ships for America. But they weren't very good quality. And they named all the ships Jala, which means water. There was the Jala Dweepa, Jala Duta, Jala this, Jala that, so many Jalas. All their ships. I know devotees, they went in London someone found out that the Jaladutta was docked in whatever the port is in London. I don't know. So all the devotees went running down to the port, and they were running to go from ship to ship to see the Jaladutta, and they turned the corner, and there's this ship, and it's the Jaladwipa. Wasn't it Jaladutta? Anyway, so Prabhupada arrived, and as you know, Prabhupada was sponsored. There was one Mr. Agarwal from Mathura. He had his son, Gopal Agarwal, living in Butler, Pennsylvania. He had been living several years in America. He married an American woman. And this Mr. Agarwal, he would meet many sadhus, and they would always say, you know, we want to go to America or something. And he would always say, oh yeah, I'll sponsor you, I'll have my son sponsor. And he would write a letter to his son. So the son would get the sponsorship forms from the Indian embassy, and he would sign them and send them. And then they would never hear anything again about it. So when the father wrote about to sponsor Prabhupada, you know, he thought it would just be the same. So he signed the forms, sent them to the embassy. Then the embassy then sent this, when this sponsorship was approved, because the sponsorship means you had to take financial responsibility for the person. So they sent that approval to Prabhupada. In Delhi, Prabhupada gave his address because he was always going back and forth. So he gave his address in Delhi, Atmaram Bookshop. There was one, the Atmaram Bookshop, where Prabhupada would sell his books. So one day they said, oh Swamiji, we have a letter for you from the Indian government, and it was the sponsorship approval, and you needed that in order to get the permission. I think they called it a P-form, which is permission to leave India. You had to have sponsorship. Not like now. Now you just go on an airplane, go wherever you want, if you're an Indian. But at that time, the government had very strict control. They didn't want Indians going outside. So they required sponsorship. The reason they didn't want Indians going outside is because many times Indians, they would go outside to other countries and become stranded, and then they would go to the embassy and say, you know, please repatriate me, and the government would have to pay for their return. So the government didn't want to do that. Anyway, so Prabhupada had written a letter when he got the permissions. He wrote a letter to Gopal Agarwal saying that I'm coming on the Jaladuta and leaving from Calcutta on such and such date, expected to arrive such and such. And Prabhupada also sent a photo, his photograph, so that they could recognize him. Of course, Prabhupada's appearance in America, he would be very easily recognizable. You know, dressed in his cotton and khadi and saffron, carrying an umbrella, and wearing, I saw those shoes, they were white rubber shoes, you know, shaped, pointed, looking very oriental like. Prabhupada also brought with him a typewriter. He carried the typewriter. So Gopal Agarwal, he was very intelligent. What he did, he arranged, there is an organization called Travelers Aid Society. And this Travelers Aid Society was meant for assisting travelers, newcomers to New York City who required some assistance, you know, in the matter of maybe getting other transportation to other places that they wanted to go, and or maybe accommodation. They had very inexpensive accommodation. So Gopal Agarwal had this traveler's aid representative meet Prabhupada at the ship on the dock in Brooklyn Pier. And he also prepaid a ticket, a bus ticket, from New York to Pittsburgh. Yeah, Pittsburgh. And Butler was an hour north of Pittsburgh. So this traveler's aid representative met Prabhupada. When Prabhupada got down from the ship, you know, we always say that Prabhupada had 40 rupees. But he had more than 40 rupees. A lot more than 40 rupees, relatively. When Prabhupada was getting down from the ship, he was going to ask the captain. Prabhupada became very close with Captain Pandya. Captain Pandya was a very pious man. In fact, Samarthi Maharaj especially selected him to be the captain of the ship for Prabhupada, because he was a vegetarian. And amongst all the captains she had, none of them were vegetarian. They're all drunkards, meat eaters, everything. But he, Captain Pandya, he was special. He was very pious. And she didn't want Prabhupada to be with these low-class sailors. That's why Prabhupada had to wait in Bombay for more than a month until she could arrange Captain Pandya. So So Prabhupada became close with them. So Prabhupada was going to ask him for a donation. Because he had nothing. And as a sannyasi, he's allowed to ask for donation. So, but then as he was going to ask for donation, instead he offered a set of his books. There were three volumes, first canto. So the captain said, oh, okay, yeah, I'll buy a set. How much? So printed in the first volume, Prabhupada had put the price. Of course, it was in rupees. And it was 16 rupees 80 paisa. So when Captain Pandey asked how much, Prabhupada said, oh, $16.80. And that's a lot of money, because at that time 5 rupees was a dollar. So how many dollars? How many? $16. I'm sorry. Is how many rupees? How many? 80. So that was a considerable sum. So he pulled out a $20 bill and said, you know, take this. So Prabhupada had a $20 bill. And that was a lot of money at that, because at that time in 1965, gasoline, petrol was 25 cents a gallon. Can you imagine? Now it's $5 a gallon. So at that time it was 25 cents a gallon. And you could ride on the bus or the subway for 15 cents. So Prabhupada had $20. That was the first book distribution. And Prabhupada saw that you convert books into money and you have no problem. So Prabhupada got down. He was met by the Traveler's Aid representative, and he took Prabhupada to the Sindhya office in Lower Manhattan. And Prabhupada went in there, and Prabhupada had a book, his return passage back to India. That's the first thing he did. So he selected 2 months henceforward. He said he'll go back to India. Because Prabhupada, when he got the visa in Boston, when the ship came, he went through immigration, and they gave him a 3-month permit. So Prabhupada thought he would stay 2 months. So then from the Sindhya line, then the Traveler's Aid representative brought him to the Port Authority bus terminal, and Prabhupada got on the bus and went to Pittsburgh. Arrived at Pittsburgh late at night, and then Gopal Agarwal was there at the bus station and immediately recognized Prabhupada and brought him to his home. But his home, he lived in a townhouse. He had his wife and 2 children, a girl. She was about 7 or 8 years old. Her name was Pamela. And then the young child, practically an infant, his name was Bridge. One child had a Christian name, the other child had a Hindu name. So Prabhupada couldn't stay in their place because the place was too small. They didn't have any separate room. So there was a YMCA. You know, YMCA in America, they have, it's called Young Men's Christian Association. And what they do is they provide very basic accommodation and other services. And that YMCA was only 6 blocks from Gopal Agarwal's house. So Prabhupada could walk. So Prabhupada stayed at the YMCA. He had his own room, very simple. It's not a hotel or anything. It's more like a dormitory. And every morning Prabhupada would walk over to their house, and he would sit with them. Oh, and you know, Prabhupada brought with him from India, because Prabhupada didn't think there would be any vegetables and cereals. He thought America, there would only be meat, because that was the impression he had from the media. So Prabhupada brought a bag of oats, cereal, with him on the ship. So Prabhupada would, every morning, he would walk over there and he would prepare those oats with milk. And that was his breakfast. And then Prabhupada would prepare lunch. Prabhupada had this cooker, this 3 or 4 tier brass cooker. You know, where the bottom one, you cook the dal, then the next one, the rice, or maybe it's reversed, maybe the rice, or I don't know. And then the sabzis. And then Prabhupada would make chapatis of flour. And he didn't even have a rolling pin. He used some, maybe a bottle or something. He'd roll out chapatis. And then he would have lunch at around noontime. So he would do this. And but Gopal Agarwal, he would come home for lunch at noontime. And his wife, Sally, her name was Sally Agarwal, she would make a sandwich for him. So Prabhupada would be having this, you know, sabjis and dal and rice and chapatis, very nice. And Gopal Agarwal would have his, you know, little sandwich, you know. So then one day he has, you know, and Prabhupada then offered him, all right. And he made him a plate. And Prabhupada really enjoyed the prasadam. And then, so then he would take the, and then Sally Agarwal, she would see her husband enjoying all the, so she said, well, I want some too. So then she started taking. So then gradually it became that Prabhupada was cooking for all three of them. And they would have these huge lunches. And they were very happy. So, Sally argued, this is like in Butler, this is like an experimentation time. Prabhupada wanted to see how Americans were living, what they're thinking, you know, are they religious, or, you know, what do they do? And so she would explain, they would have long talks with Sally Agarwal. And then sometimes they like to show Prabhupada what America was about. So she would take Prabhupada to the supermarket. You know, Prabhupada had never seen a supermarket. And Prabhupada would take the trolley and go and pick the vegetables. You know, everything wrapped in cellophane, everything clean, every, you know, piece of okra was perfect. No need for cutting or throwing out the rotten things or anything. Everything. So Prabhupada enjoyed that. And but then Sally Agarwal was thinking, you know, what are they going to do with this Swami is living with us, and his appearance is so unusual. You know, what am I going to say to my neighbors and my friends? And so she had a good idea that she would advertise Prabhupada's presence, and she went to the local newspaper, the Butler Eagle, and gave a complete description of Prabhupada and what he was doing, you know, that he had his mission. They sent a reporter to her house and a photographer, and they interviewed Prabhupada and then took a picture of Prabhupada standing holding the Bhagavatam, explaining what Prabhupada's mission was. And in this way, she advertised Prabhupada's presence and that he was giving lectures, and then she could call her friends and invite them over in the evenings. They would come and they would sit with Prabhupada and ask him some questions, and Prabhupada would preach to them. And sometimes Prabhupada would go to the neighbor's house in the evenings and sit, and people would come and on the lawn, and he would speak. And then one Prabhupada had some engagements. The Lions Club, they invited him. Some seminary invited him. And then one of the professor at the Department of Philosophy at Slippery Rock College, he had seen the newspaper article. He called Prabhupada. Prabhupada went there, gave a talk. There were some Indian faculty members there. They invited Prabhupada to their house and so on. But I wanted to read when Prabhupada, when the ship was just coming. It was 2 days away from Boston. And Prabhupada wrote a poem. Prabhupada's poetry Of course, it's written in Bengali. And you have to be Bengali to appreciate, because it's written in rhyming. You know, poetry is much different than prose. Poetry is rhyming, and the language is, you know, very special. Although the poetry, Prabhupada, it's very intimate. It's almost like a diary where Prabhupada is writing his personal thoughts. So we can't appreciate the poetry. The poetry is almost like a song, like the lyrics to a song, but without the music, just the lyrics. So I'll read the translation. It's called Markane Bhagavad Dharma, Teaching Krishna Consciousness in America. My dear Lord Krishna, you're so kind upon this useless soul, but I do not know why you have brought me here. Now you can do whatever you like with me, but I guess you have some business here. Otherwise, why would you bring me to this terrible place? Most of the population here is covered by the material modes of ignorance and passion. Absorbed in material life, they think themselves very happy and satisfied, and therefore, they have no taste for the transcendental message of Vasudeva, Krishna. I do not know how they will be able to understand it. But I know that your causeless mercy can make everything possible, because you are the most expert mystic. How will they understand the mellows of devotional service? O Lord, I am simply praying for your mercy so that I will be able to convince them about your message. All living entities have come under the control of the illusory energy by your will, and therefore, if you like, by your will, they can also be released from the clutches of illusion. I wish that you may deliver them. Therefore, if you so desire their deliverance, then only will they be able to understand your message. How will I make them understand this message of Krishna consciousness? I am very unfortunate, unqualified, and the most fallen. Therefore, I am seeking your benediction so that I can convince them, for I am powerless to do so on my own. Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure, as you like. O spiritual master of all the worlds, I can simply repeat your message. So if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. This is what Prabhupada learned in Butler. He learned how to speak so that people could understand him, because he had never spoken to Westerners before. O Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands. So you have brought me here to dance. Then make me dance. Make me dance, O Lord. Make me dance as you like. I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhaktivedanta, and now, if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of Bhaktivedanta. Signed, the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, on board the ship Jaladuta, Commonwealth Pier, Boston, Massachusetts, 18 September 1965. So I'll just close to tell you one story of how Prabhupada utilized things in Krishna's service. This was in 1968. We had the storefront there, 26 Second Avenue. I was the president. And there was one devotee, his name was Hari Vilas. He was from Long Island, came from a very wealthy family. He was very eccentric. No, not that Hari Vilas. This is a different one. All devotees are eccentric, I guess, huh? But he was really special. So you know what he did one day? This is 1968, you know, where we're going to Tompkins Square Park, you know, our preaching, I mean, we're very limited. We had no books. I mean, it was just, basically, we would just sit in the storefront and chant on the japa beads and take prasadam. That was it. One day, he went to the airport and got on a plane and flew to India. Flew to Delhi. In Delhi, he got a taxi and he went to Vrindavan. I mean, in 1968, we had no concept of Vrindavan. There was no Krishna book. We just had Bhagavad Gita. There's no Vrindavan in Bhagavad Gita. Of course, Prabhupada lectured. One day Prabhupada was sitting 26 Second Avenue, all the traffic, buses and trucks and cars going by, the noise, the kids screaming and the soot, and Prabhupada sat and said, "I am not in New York City. I am in Vrindavan." So just by saying that, we wanted to go to Vrindavan, but you know, we had no concept. And of course, in those days, everything we did was with Prabhupada's permission. We wouldn't do anything without taking permission. So this devotee just gets on a plane and flies, goes to Vrindavan. He comes to Vrindavan and he buys a little set, a 6-inch set of Radha Krishna deities in Lloyd Bazaar and the Mukuts. And then he gets back in the taxi, goes back to the airport, and flies back to New York. That's all he did. You can see how eccentric he was. So then he walks in the temple. I'm sitting there, and I said, "Hari Vilas, where you been? I haven't seen you for a couple of days." He said, "Oh yeah, I went to Vrindavan." I said, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, this is what I got." And he pulls out these little deities. We had never seen a deity. So it was very astonishing. And we didn't know what to do with them. And he certainly didn't know what to do with them. You know, why did you do this? You know, how you got to get permission from the Swamiji, and so I put him up against the wall in my inimitable style and took the deities from him. And And so I didn't know what to do with them. We were like afraid of them. We were looking, well, look at this, you know, with the eyes and the shape, and this is Krishna. So Prabhupada was in Montreal at the time. So I sent them, we got a little box. I had the one devotee, Himavati, she's a very good seamstress. I had her make the clothes because he didn't get any clothes. He just got the mukuts. So we figured out how to make clothes, put on the mukuts, put them in this little box. And then I sent her to Montreal to give the deities to Prabhupada, and he'll know what to do with them. So Prabhupada was very pleased to get those deities, and he kept them. And what he did is he had his secretary Purushottam do the worship, make the offerings and do the bathing and the decoration and the arti, and Prabhupada would personally instruct him how to do every detail. And this was the first deity worship in the movement. And then what Prabhupada would do, then people at the temple where he was at, when they would come to visit him, they would see the deities and how they were being worshipped and so on. And Prabhupada kept these deities wherever he traveled, all over North America. He would take these deities with him and worship them. And this is how he taught deity worship to the devotees. And I don't know where those deities are now. I think Prabhupada left them in Calcutta eventually, years later. So that's how Prabhupada, that's how deity worship was introduced by this so-called eccentric devotee. It was, how do you add it? Prabhupada, this is Krishna's desire. He wanted to appear as a deity in the movement. So, any questions? Are you still afraid? What? Well, what I was in 1964, you wouldn't want I should be in the same, in the presence of Prabhupada. I was a college student, yeah? Yeah, those are his sister, Bhavatarini Pishima. She had a small set of that she worshipped, and she gave those to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada kept them in Mayapur. And eventually they were stolen. When the Gundas came, there was an attack. You know, they came with guns and everything. They shot Bhakti Raghava Maharaj. He lost his leg. They thought those deities were made of gold. So the Gundas, they stole them. Eventually, I think they found one of the deities in a well or something. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good question. The question is, how did Prabhupada extend his visa if he only got 3 months? The system was that they give you 3 months, but you can extend it up to 1 year. And so then Prabhupada did that. But then when that 1 year ran out, then it became a big problem. And Prabhupada applied for permanent residency, but they rejected, because they said, you came as a tourist, and now you want to change, you know, what we go through here. And I know once I took Prabhupada to the immigration department offices in New York, Church Street or something. I was dressed in my suit and tie because I was working as a teacher for the New York City Board of Education. I had my hat, shirt and tie, and we went together. I took Prabhupada, and I wanted to, that I was sponsoring. This is my teacher, and I want to sponsor his immigration. But they rejected. We tried all kinds of things. Then Allen Ginsberg, he suggested we get a lawyer. They have special immigration lawyers. So we got one lawyer, Mr. Ypsilanti. I think he was Greek. And but he was very expensive, and we didn't have any money. So I wanted to get money, so I dressed up in my suit and I went up to Fifth Avenue, where all the wealthy people are, and I would go up to people on the street and just say, please, can you help me? My grandfather, you know, is from the old country and they want to send him back, and I have to get an immigration lawyer. I don't have any money. Can you give me some money? And the people said, oh, that's terrible. Sure. And they... You know, the old country is... You know, America, New York City is the place of immigrants. The whole history. So I got all this money. Big money in those days. Then I went back to Prabhupada's apartment to give him the money. And I walked in, and they were all the devotees were sitting there, about six or seven. Prabhupada was preaching. And then, so I came in, sat down. But Prabhupada could see that I wanted to give him something. So he said, what is that? So then I just reached and I put all the bills on his table. And Prabhupada was very pleased. This is the first time anyone had ever collected. And Prabhupada said to all the others, he said, This is brahmachari. And then he explained that a brahmachari is meant for going and collecting alms and giving to the guru. But, nobody wanted to do that. Everyone, they would sit and listen to Prabhupada, but then when it came time to do something, so the immigration department, they wanted Prabhupada to go back to India and then apply for, residency. And we didn't want that. I mean, that would be terrible. At that time, 1967. So Prabhupada, he solved the problem. It was ingenious. What he did is that he went to Montreal. We had a temple there. It used to be a bowling alley. You know what a bowling alley is? Do they have them in India, bowling alleys? I don't think so. Anyway, by going to Canada, Prabhupada left the country. Then while he was in Montreal, he applied for permanent residence in Canada. And because he was Indian, that's the Commonwealth, he got permanent residence for Canada. So then when he got then he went to the American Embassy and tell them, I'm a permanent resident of Canada, and now I want to get permanent residence for America. They say, oh, okay. Because if he was living in Canada, then he can live in America too. So they immediately gave. So Prabhupada, he wrote me a letter. Oh, you want to hire big lawyers spending so much money we don't have? And I immediately... When he went to the American Embassy... He brought his books. We had, I think, at that time, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And he showed his books. And the man was very favorable. Everything was done by the books, yes?
How you met Prabhupada first time?
That's a long story. Next time. Yes? I know. Any other question? I could give a whole class on that. Yes?
Thank you, Prabhu. And the question is, how book distribution in a moment starts? As you told, first Prabhupada gave the Bhagavatam set to the captain of the Jaladuta. After that, how devotees start the book distribution in a society?
When Prabhupada arrived in America, then Prabhupada left Butler. A month later, Prabhupada, could see that it was kind of limited there in Butler. The possibilities. So Prabhupada wanted to go to New York. And he had a letter of introduction, which he had gotten in Bombay from some man, to this one Dr. Mishra. So Prabhupada went to New York. By the way, Prabhupada, when he left Butler, he first went to Philadelphia. To the University of Pennsylvania. There was a very famous, he was the most famous American Sanskritist named Norman Brown, professor, and Prabhupada went there. He arranged to give a talk. I explained, I think, previously, how Prabhupada's books arrived in America before he did, personally. And how that happened was that when Prabhupada was in Delhi distributing his books, he went to the American Embassy. And the American Embassy purchased 16 sets of books. And the American Embassy, what they would do, they would purchase books in the English-speaking countries for the Library of Congress in Washington. On behalf of the Library of Congress is the largest library in the world. Millions and millions of books. So they took 16 sets because Prabhupada published the purchase order that they made as an advertisement for his books. Or the American Embassy is taking 16 sets, you know, you should take also. So when the Library of Congress got the books, they sent them out to various university libraries. And one of them was the University of Pennsylvania because of Norman Brown being the most famous Sanskritist. And these are Sanskrit books, so they sent him a set. So when Prabhupada went there to give the talk, you know, Norman Brown had the books. Similarly, when Prabhupada went to New York and stayed with Dr. Mishra, Prabhupada must have been given a list of where the books were sent from the Library of Congress, because Prabhupada, what he would do is he was staying at West 72nd Street near Central Park West. And he would take a bus, a Broadway bus, down to 42nd Street, walk over to the New York Public Library, and go to the card catalog and see under A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam, because the books were in the New York Public Library. He used to do that. He said, that was my recreation. Because he would get great satisfaction knowing that his books were in this magnificent library. New York Public Library is very nice. It's like built like a temple, a marble temple. Oh, so then what Prabhupada would do, Prabhupada distributed his books in New York, he would go to bookshops and because I know, because then in 1968 when we got Teachings of Lord Chaitanya and the Macmillan Gita, Prabhupada told me to go to the bookshops with the books. So I went to one bookshop called Orientalia. They specialized in books from Asia. And the lady there, when she saw the picture of Prabhupada, said, oh, I know this man. He came here a year ago, 2 years ago, with his books. He had books from India. And he gave me this thing. It was shaped like a triangle, and it had vegetable inside it, fried. I don't know what it was, but oh, it tasted so nice. Oh, he's a very nice man. Yeah, I'll take all his books. So this is how Prabhupada distributed his books, by giving them prasadam, samosas. People, they had never seen a samosa before. And good samosa, not this aloo samosa stuff. Real samosa. With vegetable peas and cauliflower. And, huh?
First books in library.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in Wisconsin, Milwaukee.
Oh.
It's all three books. It's the first books he printed, Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah. These are in the 70s. Very nice. Well, when I was living in America, Gargamuni, he went to a used bookshop. And there are many stories. One devotee went to in Idaho, in Boise, Idaho. The library, they had all these old books that they didn't want anymore, and they were selling them by the pound. You know, they'd give you 10 pounds of books for, you know, $2. So he happened to go there because he was in the university, he was interested in books. And there was a set of the original Bhagavatams from India. How could the Boise, Idaho, who knows how the books got there? And Gargamuni went to a used bookshop, I think in Atlantic City. They had a set of the original Bhagavatams, mint condition. These books are the, like, you know, ever hear this message in a bottle? You write a message. They just found one. It's 100 years ago. Somebody wrote a message with the date, put it in a bottle, threw it in the ocean from America or something, and it landed up in England. On the beach, 100 years it took. So these books are like that. On this material ocean of birth and death, they get sent out, they're planted. Who knows where they'll wind up? Who'll read them? Srila Prabhupada ki! Srila Prabhupada ki! Srila Prabhupada ki! Hare Krishna!